think my wife's got about eight of them.
I have no idea.
She didn't tell me.
You know,
we left the island.
Well, 6:30, we'll call the meeting to order. Excuse me, we have the full committee in attendance. We have James Joling. We do not have Ashley Snyder. I don't know if she called or...
She called us.
Okay. So that's our roll call. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. If everyone received that?
Yeah, and then the second page, first paragraph there where it says that I requested the random money collected to use towards the maintenance of the property. I believe it was Doug Noble that requested that. It's the second line in the first paragraph.
Okay.
Page six, page two.
Oh, okay.
So, you have a recollection of that, Doug?
Yes, I did. I read that too, but I figured gave me.
So, if we could have that adjusted, anything else?
Yeah, I already told her that fourth line. It motion was named by her Supervisor Noble, and then had seconded by Supervisor Dodge.
Right, Vicki said she caught that. Anything else on the minutes? Doctor, we have a motion for approval.
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor Dodge, seconded by Supervisor Noodle to approve the minutes of July 9th. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Excuse the governor? You're not in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and government comments. We talked about bringing in the master plan for the Katy Park, and when we get to that, I'll give some comments on I think what we'll need to aim for as far as being restricted budget-wise. I think there's still numerous things that we can do, so we'll get into that discussion. You heard me asking Gary about our accident victim on the mower. Well, it was a tractor that was rolling. And he's still not able to be back to work. Injuries to his neck and headaches and dizziness, and a piece of equipment seems to be probably total, but the insurance companies will work on that. I don't know if people noticed when they came in the lobby, but John Howe's comments on the movies that we show in the parks. And on the 10th, I believe, there is one at Silver Lake Park. And if you know people that haven't been out to that park, I was out there last Thursday night, I think, with my granddaughter. Beautiful park, and a lot of times I get to one or two of the parks, and sometimes that's one of them I don't get to very often. But Friday night sounds like a nice night, so maybe we should promote that, like tomorrow night, you know, get more and more people out there. They always have good attendance, and weather-wise, it sounds like a real nice night.
Which park is that one at?
Silver Lake. The one with the beach on the east side.
I actually went to that when they showed one of their first movies.
Yeah.
They put a screen up, and it was right towards the lake. It's kind of pretty, very pretty.
Oh, it's gorgeous out there. You can't tell the difference between the air and the water right now with the temperature.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's all I have. Any other supervisors, anything they want to comment on this evening before we get into the agenda? If not, we'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizen that wishes to address the committee on any matter regarding facilities, highways, parks, golf, would have 5 minutes to address the committee. Any citizens wish to speak? Yes, sir. The only thing we ask is that you just give your name and address for the minutes.
Sure. Jim Neals, 11314 79th Street, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. I think this is the fourth time I've been before Highway and Parks in probably the last 10 years. Reason tonight, just want to see what the presentation is going to have relative to the rec. I've played out there for years. I led a group of golfers and trying to drive change since about 2000. I'd say between 2000 and 2010, I was probably the least liked person on the course at any time. As I say, in today's world, I'm probably one of the most liked. It has to do with pushing for the new management team and change of conditions, superintendent, GM, that type of thing. So I'm really glad to see what's happened. I guess just a couple of quick notes here with some bullet points from a lot of the guys that I play with, just about the issue of the red. With play being up, and you know, you can see that revenue is up in these types of things. Just the thought process, consider leaving open red open in 2013. We saw what was done on the white this year, the improvements. The same improvements are planned or will be planned for the blue in the future. But if you leave the red open, you're not going to have to turn your revenue away. I left the clubhouse at 4 o'clock today. I played the same group Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We wanted to get a tee time for Friday on the blue. It's completely booked with Net Partners. They got us going off on the back white at 8:30 and then to the red to play 18. So just the question that surfaces today, if the red is open, what do? Are we turning revenue away? You know, if we wait another year to see what happens, we've got a positive turnaround, a trend. One of the big concerns the fellas have is there's a lot of recruiting going on. I've recruited a lot of players back, a lot of others that are bringing lower handicap players in. The white and the red are championship courses. White and blue are championship courses. When you get lower handicap people on the white and the blue, on a day where there's a lot of play, pace of play is real important to recruiting and maintaining your lower handicap players who are your higher incremental spent players. So, I mean, managing pace of play, if we don't have the red and we continue to bring new people in, is a huge concern for the groups that I play with and the people that we're trying to bring in for next year. So that's just kind of some of our thought process. I'll touch base just kind of real quick. I've got a list of rundown of, since I've been here 3 or 4 times in the days where we weren't happy, we are very happy. It's really good to see the significant turnaround at Kenosha County Golf. This year seems to be a transition year. Dave and Dan have done an outstanding job in buying a lot of other players' opinions. Our course conditions are 5-star. We played with a guy, Tom Radke, from Milwaukee last week with a friend of mine, Jim Oswald. Radke hadn't been down in a year and a half, but he knows a lot of guys in Milwaukee. He couldn't get down, couldn't wait to get down here and play because he had heard that Brightdale has become the right place to play. He's out of Milwaukee. He was totally blown away after playing the blue course. Greens rolled better than they ever have. Tom's a retired IBM service engineer. He knows a whole lot of people in the whole southeastern Wisconsin area, plays a lot of golf. But there's a lot of Milwaukee plays starting to come in, which are good things. And that's just kind of the message from Tom Radke out of Milwaukee. As I said, the course conditions have never been like this. This is 5-star. The customer service experience, that's a huge complaint that we had years past. Customer service experience is outstanding. The clubhouse, Andy, Bobby, Andrew, Jeff, they know everybody's name. They know golf, they know and understand it. It's just a real nice relationship that's being built. The food is excellent. The draft beer has been a hit. It's keeping people to stick around. Players have got a good relationship with, you know, Amanda, Jennifer, and Melissa out at Brightdale. And they're being tipped better. You know, we're bringing lower handicap players back in. They're higher incremental spends. They would much rather stay at Brightdale and spend the money that we're spending than they would to go down to the tavern down the road, turn in your golf cart, and get your second pitcher free. And the rationale, that's what you get from the lower handicap player that's starting to come back. It's simply this, is we want to be in the clubhouse. We want our revenue there. We want to support, you know, the mission of municipal golf. I'm going to touch on the true mission of municipal golf. We're back there. We lost so many good players. A lot of players from the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, Chamber of Commerce years back. There was a lot of skins game going on. They were there instead of Kenosha Country Club or other high-end places because they were there for the true mission of municipal golf. What is the true mission of municipal golf? That's what's being executed now in our facility. The true mission of municipal golf is to keep golf affordable for seniors. So seniors can play as much golf as their body can allow them to play in retirement. My dad, who has since passed, I played a ton of golf with him when he was alive. He was forced into early retirement at 57. For 20 years, he played on the senior pass, he would have never been able to play the amount of golf if it wasn't for, you know, Kenosha County Golf and the senior pass program. That's one aspect of, you know, what municipal golf really is across the country. Secondly, municipal golf's role is to keep golf affordable for youth. Don't discriminate based upon family income. There's such a major push now across the country on the first tee program. So many people stepping in to get the game revitalized with the youth. Dave, conditions of the course excellent. Dan is, I think he's got our youth program up. I'm out there on Wednesday mornings. I play at 7. You can see mom sitting with a younger daughter waiting for, you know, the son who's in the youth program sitting there having lunch or whatever. But our youth program out of Brightondale, there's a lot of people out there. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's like it's never been. We've never had a real youth program before. You know, that's Dan's staff. And, you know, to have Dan, Bob Tierney, Andrew, you know, those guys, you know, they know how to teach golf, and the young kids really look up to those. It's really important to them. Most importantly in today's world, Dennis, give me 2 minutes if I run too late. We could.
I already gave you two.
Okay.
So try to wrap her.
Okay. Serve as a lifestyle amenity in our community, like Recplex, to help support economic development. Village of Pleasant Prairie, Recplex, largest municipal health club in the country, very widely regarded. You know, gets a lot of press, a lot of positive public relations. We've got 63 holes of high-quality municipal golf. If you're in a facilities planning world and you're out looking for sites, you go in and test lifestyle amenities, what kind of life are your employees going to have, especially if you're looking at moving people. You don't want to downgrade them by moving to communities. Lastly, media control, public relations control. Because of the new wealth in our community. I've been a member of Recplex since it's open. Dave Hassel works out there. My wife teaches classes there when we're back in Wisconsin. They really manage the media well. They manage public relations well. They got a $7 million donation from Uline to build that Olympic-sized pool. Uline has stepped into this community, given Kenosha Country Club $500,000 to redo their clubhouse, in excess of 10 memberships. There is one thing I think I picked up on Recplex that I think is really important. I sent an electronic link to Supervisor Noble that I've known for quite a while about the Zilber organization. They hit me at Recplex. Nate Frankie works out at Zilber. He's a leasing agent for Zilber Properties, also known as Town Investments. Town Investments now owns, Zilber owns well in excess of 1 million square feet of multi-tenant buildings. They bought all the Riley buildings. They built a 60,000 square foot multi-tenant building that was just completed on 95th Street and Highway 31. They just got Pleasant Prairie approval to build another 175,000 square foot multi-tenant building. This one's going to be sublet in increments of 40,000. That's bringing jobs into our community. But I had the pleasure of meeting Joel Zilber back in the early 80s. He passed away at the age of 92. He, in his last 2 years that he's alive, he left behind the Zilber Foundation, which is going back into the various communities where they own square footage like they do here. They've been huge in Milwaukee. That's a mega developer. Joe Zilber has given away $30 million to, before he passed away, to Marquette, $10 million to UWM, a $50 million 10-year program to the inner city. They're huge providers of youth programs in the community. And my point is this. We're working so hard to go it alone, and we've got a golf operation that's been turned around. I think the unfortunate thing without having Dan and Dave here sooner and getting ourselves fixed to where we are is we've had new wealth come into this community, and look what they've done. $7 million out of the Village of Pleasant Prairie for that pool that came from New Line. We got new faces in town. There's new money. I really think we need to play the public relations card. When they get to know us and hear about us executing the mission of municipal golf, don't be surprised if we play our cards right, somebody knocks on our door and wants to help us with our youth programs, help us to do something with our courses. When you got people like this coming into your community making this type of an investment, Zilber recognizes the value of lifestyle amenities. Every time they build a spec building, they're bringing somebody in from northern Illinois or somewhere to fill it. So there's my spiel on Zilber, but I think this issue of lifestyle amenity is huge going forward. I think 63 holes of municipal golf in the Village of Pleasant Prairie Recplex is something that a community this size across the country, I don't think anybody else has what we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Ooh. move on to new business, highways. Director's report.
Yeah, I'll update you on some of the projects that are going on. Highway Cape reconstruction west of Highway 31 is proceeding on. Had a little bit of issue with getting utilities relocated, but that's all been completed. They're on track to get a binder course on pavement, hopefully by about August 20th, so there will be some access provided to the schools, probably limited to staffing, but that's back on track to get completed. Project on Highway G, 30th Avenue, north side of Kenosha, is proceeding along. All the underground work is complete, and they'll be starting to work on the base and the curb and gutter soon. Highway C and MB intersection, project's been awarded to Payne and Dolan. Construction should be starting within the next couple weeks. We have a pre-construction meeting scheduled for this Friday for that project. Out at Petrifying Springs, the road and parking lot reconstruction is moving along really well. All the underground work is done with the storm sewer. The curb and gutter is complete on the southerly part of the project. Everything south of where the dam and bridge is located, that's approximately two-thirds of the project. That paving will start next week, and with some good weather by the end of next week, that paving should be complete on the road and the parking lots. The dam and removal and bridge construction project at Petrifying Springs, we received the permit from the Army Corps of Engineers today, which triggers several other permits we need to receive from the DNR, which hopefully will get within, I don't know, hopefully days, but we don't know. But that we did meet with a contractor, and he's very confident that dam removal and bridge construction will still be completed this year. On the state side, on the interstate, the ramp closures at Highway 50 and Highway 158 that are occurring right now will be in effect until mid-September. And at that point, when those open, all the ramps will be open for the balance of this year and over the winter. The actual mainline construction on the interstate is completion is still scheduled just late this year. You're probably looking at the end of November before that'll be open. But it's really been moving along very well, obviously, with the good weather conditions. So it wouldn't surprise me if that gets completed even earlier. Maintenance-wise, we've been in highways doing real well, getting a lot of work done. State's been giving us a lot of work on Highway 50. We did a lot of concrete patches in Paddock Lake area. We're going to be moving on to Highway 31, hopefully by the end of this week, and doing more concrete patching. Our asphalt paving program is moving right along, getting a lot of work done. I just keep hearing over and over all the good comments from both our employees and from the management about working the 4 10-hour days. They just feel the efficiency in these, particularly these projects where we're doing asphalt paving and concrete paving, that has been increased tremendously. So continue to hear good things about that. I think that was all I had for reports. Any questions?
Any questions, Supervisor?
Do you have any measurements for productivity where you could measure that productivity's increase? And I say that because I actually worked for a manufacturing company 30 years ago and suggested we go to 4 days, but we have base measurements and we're able to, our productivity went, measurement-wise, went through the roof.
Right. We've not completed those yet. We're going to have some select projects, particularly in the asphalt paving area, where we're going to try to do the measurements and the comparisons, because that's an area where we have the most background information, and it's an area where we keep very, very detailed records of the work hours. So. There's certain areas where we're definitely going to be doing those measurements. We just haven't completed it yet.
Nothing else for Gary? Thank you, Gary. We'll move on to old business parks, and this is where we're going to talk about the Cady Park Master Plan just shortly. The past committee had just made one recommendation so far on a very extensive plan, and that was to go with a restoration plan that did not change water levels, and I know I've explained that a couple times. So going from that, I didn't want this to just sit. There are things in here that in these economic times and with our budget that's going to be forthcoming. We just don't have the money to get into some of the larger concepts that have been proposed here. And most of the larger concepts that were proposed were meant to have partnerships. You know, when the people from Gateway and Snap-on and all the good people that were on these committees got involved, they knew that the county wasn't going to be able to spend $22 million. Those things are going to take different people to get involved. But I wanted to involve the committee in were the things that we could do. Now, if you talk to people from Kenosha County, you'll find that John Rudy is one of the best grant writers there is. If you look at one of the things coming up here on the dam removal and the Silver Lake Trail, aggressive grant writing, looking into what you can get done, I think there's things that this committee can still do, and I'm drawn to activities on this report, so that's what I thought I'd maybe discuss tonight. It's on page 22. If we all have the same report. And just quickly, they have fishing, windsurfing, paddle, kayak, and canoeing. One of the things we don't allow right now is boats. It's on the sign there, and I'm not for it being on that sign, but it's on there. So there's fishing right now, ongoing out there. Unless the sheriff's department gets aggressive, there also is canoeing and there's kayaking. I've seen it, you know. So I think it's something that this committee, that's what I want is recommendations. This committee to say, we're going to allow canoeing, we're going to allow kayaking. The next thing is one of the larger things where I think we can get involved with the various groups. There's a dive team in Kenosha County that does our rescue. There's also many recreational divers. And one of the recommendations is for us to have a submerged dive platform there. Last fall, we already did have exercises done by our dive team where they did their exercises on saving and finding submerged bottles and things that they planted. So that's something that I think we could involve Mr. Rudy and try to find some money to do. When you look into the other things that are already ongoing, passive land recreation, GPS training, that doesn't cost anything. Orienteering, geocaching is something that I didn't know anything about, but there's already like 30 of them out there, and in the county parks, John said there's 400 of them. This, they have huge groups of people that do this. And if, does everybody know what geocaching is? You stick something out and you give its coordinates, and there's clubs that go on the internet, and it's just a neat thing. They go and they find this thing, and usually they leave it there. Birding astronomy, we had Lake County people last year out there twice with their huge scopes. We already built a pad for astronomy. So these are a couple of things that are already going on. You get into events there, races, Boys and Girl Scouts, hot air ballooning. We've got a hot air balloon guy right in Wheatland that flies over there 3-4 times a week. And concerts, I know that we already do the movies in the park. I think, and we'll talk to John. John's not here this evening, by the way, because he's in Pennsylvania, I believe, with the people that they're doing a program to show some of their grants that they've given out. And these are the people that gave us $384,000 total for the dam removal.
They gave us $150,000 of that $384,000.
Okay. So that's why John's not here, because they wanted to show off some of their programs that they've done. We've already got the dog park there, but these are just a couple, ten things I wanted to throw out, get some ideas from the committee, but there's already such easy access to these little things that we can give the people that don't cost us anything, and then try to pick a project like the dive platform that we do go after some money, and get the dive people in Kenosha County involved, and pick a project that we think we can do. So, any comments from the committee yet?
I think that on the water, non-powered, canoeing, fishing, that type of thing, that should go. Even if you wanted to use electric trolling motor, that shouldn't be a problem out there. It's not big enough for a powered boat, but I don't. Is there some ruling other than the sign says no boating?
There's not. We had always talked about a trolling motor being allowed, but when this committee put this report together, all of a sudden it was on there, no boats. Problem there is, and that's why I mentioned the dive thing, because if we can get that going, we would have a little spot for a vehicle to pull down with a canoe or a. The dive boats would need an actual spot for a good sized trailer. So,
do they run those off the boat, or could they run it right off of the staging area that would be adjacent to this submerged platform? It seemed to me like, would they need to launch?
They need a launch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Which isn't, with our facilities, that hard to do.
No. And, as far as the passive stuff, there's really nothing we got to do there. That's all happening, right? Active, some of that stuff, for instance, a ropes course, that just smells like liability to me, right? But yoga, they can go out there and do yoga down there, why?
Right.
But I have heard a little bit about the scuba diving. We have a benefit that to the community in that dive team, not only in Kenosha. We could use, and you can start to develop that. Maybe even a public-private partnership with, I've heard Diver Dance. I don't know any of the details.
They belong.
There's some interest there.
Yeah.
And you know what? Certifying people and having a location to certify people is a big deal. And there's a lot of people that are interested on that, whether they're just going down the Caribbean a few times a year or maybe every year to go diving. They need to get certified. It could become a revenue stream. I don't know what the potential there is. I think Diver Dan's or someone like that would have a much better feel for it. But then you've got the safety aspect of it being that, is it Sheriff's Department type thing?
Well, no, there's private, the fire departments.
Fire department, okay.
Yep.
All right.
It's Kenosha County Dive Team, and it involves all of them.
Okay.
And when they do like they did it out there last year, they also invite Northern Illinois Dive Teams, right. And they have big exercises.
It sounds to me like if we could get some costing behind that or an idea of what it would take to put together, we could find out where we're at, but just going in blindly. I don't know what it would take to lay in a ramp. Do you have to concrete it? Can it be steel? I've seen those steel drop-in ones. I have no idea on the cost, but there's a lake up north that we go on, and it prevents a lot of washout in the four-wheel drive vehicles who spin the tires and stuff, and it's prefabbed, and it's all stamped steel, works very well, and you didn't have to lay in concrete. I'm trying to think if they take it out each fall. I'm just not sure about what the guys...
They may. A lot of them now use a pre-stressed concrete slab that are segmented.
And that would be fine,
they
too.
They put them, too. Yeah. They don't rust. Well, that would be something that this committee could say that we wanted our staff to look into costs.
Would you need a motion for that?
I don't think so. It's, you know, discussion. And
Ray, what are your thoughts on, and I just look at scuba and or just allowing kayaking in, but obviously you need to get some parameters around what would it take to put together. You're just going to flip it. So let's just do it.
Yeah, the key would be that the ramp for, it would be used, like you say, for dive teams. I think there's, the thought was originally, too, that there'd be a dock area where, or a prep area with possibly a dock that would allow guys to bring their gear down, do their staging right there, and then jump off shore and go out to a submerged platform.
Right.
So there's that piece of it. But the key was, as far as the boat launch goes, that we have access for safety. So in case the dive team had to go out there for, God forbid, to rescue. So that would be the key driver of that, is to have that in place. And I think that was really the only reason that, from what I recall, that they didn't want the boats to go out there right away till we had that access,
right,
so that we could, in the event there was an accident, because that lake is, you know better than anybody, Dennis, other than it's deep and it's quick deep. So if folks could get in trouble that pretty quickly if they don't know what they're doing, and we want to have emergency access. So I have no problem. We could probably fairly easily pull together, because I think we started to pull some of this together when we were doing the brainstorming and doing the work groups, to pull together a more fleshed out kind of a proposal for what the ramp would cost and some of the other features, and then look at some other sources for getting money.
Right.
Because I know
we can do the ramp type thing ourselves. We've built bridges. Right. We've built, in Bassett 8-9 years ago, box culverts that are very complex. You know, so I know we can do it. And I think the dive team thing is one. And if we do allow boats out there, we don't want people with big boats anyway.
No.
So they wouldn't use a ramp. We probably just need a spot where they can park and grab their canoe and
portage it down.
And take it down, right?
How would we be able to control? Because is that about 45 acres out that lake? Or?
Roughly.
Okay. Yeah, no, so it's not, it could become a zoo real quick, right? If there wasn't some type of a control on, and if you say no motorized, right, but then you let the dive boats out there, well,
yeah,
you made that argument,
I think we would have to cautiously approach that so that we did lay out how we wanted it to work. The dive part of it, as far as the boats go, I think the thoughts were initially, because we had somebody come in from, I can't remember if it was Diver Dan, I can't remember which group it was, but they came and talked to the work group, and we were starting to brainstorm what type of activities would be out there. And the thought driving that was that they bring their gear, they weren't boat-centered. They were just gear-centered and getting in the water. They needed a platform, and we were talking about designing a platform that would work dual purpose, fishing guys that could get out up here, as well as diving guys. There might be different levels to it, but there would be one pier that would accommodate both of those groups. So we talked about that. It was a while ago now, but that would be the concept as far as the divers go. The dive boat part of it came into play when you're talking about like doing those search and rescue, the practice guys, or if you had an event out there. That would really be the main need for the ramp part of it.
Because there's been people now every weekend with little kayaks and canoes on.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not crowded. Yesterday, I think there was none of those, but there was, probably 10 people fishing early. Because I pull in and I read my newspaper. The guys that did the exercise last year, they staged off the dam. That's where they did all their staging. So I guess I'm just thinking of something that we can do, like say for the Randall Fire Department, because they do like to take their boat you know, that we can actually get a boat in there. And if we did have an emergency.
You've got, as an example, do you know about the size of that one?
A small boat ramp could handle it.
Is that like a, maybe an 18 foot or 20 foot?
Well, they got a big pontoon thing that they,
use,
yeah. But they've got small boats too.
Yeah.
They've got the airboats.
I can just see some of these fishermen, they really don't care. You know, they might have a 20 foot Lund in there with a 200 horse, and they're going to drop it in there just because they can. You know, and it's just. And you got these kayakers and canoes.
We'd have to control that with access.
Well, yeah, I was talking about the dive teams.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying, if you're not able to control that access somehow.
You know what I've seen out there more than anything is these that the guy sits in the middle.
Yep.
And he's got
flippers on.
Leg pouch. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're just flipping around.
The reason I like that is because you potentially could turn it into a revenue source. That could help subsidize other things long term. And when you were talking about a dock or staging area, were you thinking parallel to or perpendicular to the shoreline?
I remember right what we were talking about with the fishing guy. It was basically the fishing guy that we had from 4-H, basically, and then with somebody from one of the dive shops. And I thought it was a T. There was two kinds. I think there was a T and there was a U, I guess you'd call it. Those two, but we didn't get to like putting pen. It was just conceptual. Those were the two kinds of layouts.
Because you made a great point, and that is it drops off pretty steeply. So if you're not going to support it, were you thinking floating?
Yeah, these were removable. Yep.
Take them out.
Yep.
Okay. Because that one, installation and maintenance of those is a lot lower. If the water level varies a little bit.
Varies slopes. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Is there some things that you can kind of pull together for us to better understand?
I think so.
I look at this one as just one that I could say I could definitely support that, because I've heard some other supervisors even talk about that there's been a voiced interest in that. There's certainly potential for some revenue stream coming out of it that would be beneficial to the park itself, and there's no reason that you couldn't somehow keep that concentrated to do things out there. The other thing, was there any talk about like a changing room, bathroom? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't know. That's not cheap. Don't get me wrong. But
well, we've got. I mean, if you read the master plan, yes,
okay,
there is. But I don't think we can nickel that dime out right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're talking a few hundred thousand dollars for main pavilion buildings. And if you read the full report, so I guess what I'm trying to get going here is something.
Yep.
You know, and something that we can afford, which is we can't afford. So we have to get people involved, get some interest, and if there's something that our public works people can do to facilitate the dive teams being able to get a boat, that type of thing. And Mr. Rudy's already done some things. I mentioned the astronomy. That was very popular a couple of nights that we had out there. They're just letting people a little bit at a time. People would really appreciate if we took off that sign they couldn't have a canoe out there. I know that. I've heard.
Can't have what?
A canoe. Oh,
yeah.
They think, what? Our sign that says what you can't do is huge. And what you can do is fishing and walking around and not touching anything. So,
is that an ordinance or?
No, the committee came up with it. Not this committee. Not this committee.
I just don't remember the sign. But is that out right on the big one right there?
No. It would be shot down if it was out there. It's inside. It's inside.
Fair enough. Target practice.
It's not an ordinance. It's not enforceable.
Why can't we just remove it then?
It would be up to the county executive.
So what are we
why do we make a recommendation and we change the sign?
There is absolutely no reason there should be kayaking, canoeing, or any non-powered boat. And I would even support electric trolling motors.
I would agree.
I would say just leave it at non-motorized boats for now.
Might be able to get that through quicker than anything.
Yeah. Again, the only thought there was, in order to permit that, go into the liability part of it, if we open that up, being a fully, it's on our property completely. It's completely encircled by county property. So it's our baby. So if we don't have at least provided the basic facilities for an emergency rescue, and somebody does flip a boat or first-time kayak or whatever, there's a situation. Yeah, I would just want to double-check on that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
How do they manage like Lake Andrea? Do they have somebody on staff all the time?
With the Rexplex there, I don't know if that's a different animal because you've got at least folks there pretty much.
Yeah, non-motorized boats.
Yeah, no, I understand, but that doesn't mean that you're not out there canoeing.
Yeah, they do windsurfing.
Yep, and that was actually one of the groups we talked to as well, was we had windsurfers come in that they definitely want to, and they know exactly with prevailing winds and where they want the, and we want to equip. So we've talked to a number of different groups that have a big interest in getting in the water.
So I think maybe Ray for tonight, because I didn't want this each night to be a major thing, that we may have given you enough to look into, and then everybody, I mean, it's good initial discussion, but keep going through this book, and every meeting will work. Rick?
Yeah, I was wondering if Jonathan could come back under these trails and give us an idea of what's feasible on the additional hiking trails, cross-country skiing and snowshoe, limited bike trails, linked to regional trails, greenways, and bird watching blinds or stands. What are those might be doable? I don't think we're any major costs involved in those either.
The initial hiking trail, some of it will have to do also with some of, if we get this grant money, this other land acquisition we talked about. Cross-country skiing and snowshoeing was available last year, but we didn't have any snow. So, because we had the youth, we're going to come out for an ice fishing derby. Mm-hmm. Pringle Nature Center, where we had our meeting, was going to bring in all their snowshoes out. We had this whole big party plan, and then there was no snow. Bike trails, I think you get into trouble with, but that's something, Jack, you get into trouble with people that don't want the walking trails torn up. So that's, and then you lose me from there when you get into zip lines and, you know. That.
Could we ask the people from Pringle to work with us on this and maybe they could help us out?
They don't have any money.
They have some equipment.
They have some equipment. They were willing to do that, but they just had that one employee that you met. The rest of it are all volunteers. We'd have to get our own volunteers. You know, it's not like they owe us anything. Well, they do, but they're just barely making it on what they've got going out there. But I think it was a good discussion. And
yeah, we got some homework.
But
well, I have saw this in the paper. Pass it around.
You brought it up. I heard him say it.
and pass that down. But Waterford does this hot air balloon rally.
Yeah, we can get
I beat this thing to death. I don't know why we don't jump on board with that. It wouldn't cost anything. It's not like you have to build anything there. A hot air balloon rally. Nobody in Kenosha County does one. You see, not just one balloon go up. You see, multiple balloons go up. It would. You know, you talk about something that is value to the community. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be as big as a country thunder, but you'd probably have thousands of people come to KD Park to watch these balloons launch. It's a perfect venue for it, in my opinion, because it's kind of a bowl-shaped thing. You can have the balloons down in the bowl and launching, and then the people would be up around the ridge and all of a sudden, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people would actually come out to KD Park and see the jewel of a park it is. And once you get people that are aware of it, you know, they might be able, you know, then you're talking revenue stream. And even if it isn't for the county, it's for the businesses in the area.
I think we have to look into who does that there.
Well, Waterford's doing it, so it wouldn't take.
We do have a local guy that does it.
Yeah, John Tryon.
Yeah.
He's actually a very good friend of mine. He's our scout leader in our troop.
So we could ask him.
He's an active balloonist, in other words? So he knows the people and...
He does it for a living.
Perfect. He does it
for a living. Yep.
Okay.
What liabilities involved?
Oh, sure. We got insurance. There's liabilities
there. We have to work out those details, but yeah, the concept
I've been actually saying that for 6 years.
Long time.
Maybe if I keep saying it, something will happen. Who knows?
Well, we would have to, you know, organize it ourselves.
Yeah.
So it'd be something we'd start working on now for next year.
If the gentleman you know has any just even rough ideas of what's necessary and how you know who you talk to, it would be great just to have some starting points. I know absolutely nothing about hot air ballooning, but it's a good idea. There's like you said.
Well, I've thought all on this, yeah. So that's another point we can look at. Okay. All right, we better move on. New business park. As I said, John's not here. What are you going to do with this?
Yeah, just the committee, I think we got that report in the packets. Gary kind of went over the first point, the update on the PETS project, both the roads part of it as well as the dam removal bridge construction. So I won't go over that again. Silver Lake Trail is moving along as well. Contract has been awarded. We're waiting for the contracts to get back. Working things out so we can have a pre-construction meeting, hoping we can have one this week, next week early at the latest, hopefully. There still are some incidental permits that we've got to get there that we were just informed of, too, from the DNR, but those sound like they shouldn't be anywhere near the offer the other ones were for the PETS dam removal one. So we anticipate still getting that project done this year, or at least substantially complete. Maybe we don't get the finished grading and seeding down, but we do anticipate getting that whole project, like I said, substantially complete this year. Update on the KD Park expansion. I wish I had more substantial information, but John actually had contacted Jim Ritchie at the DNR on Friday, and the latest note I got from Vicki actually this morning on that was that they're still waiting for their appraisal to come back. They haven't gotten their appraisal now. It's been going on 2 months in order for them to figure out exactly what the dollar amount of the grant is. We put in for the full boat, which was $300,000. We're anticipating and hoping that it's going to be somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 what we're going to get. But we haven't gotten the final number from them yet. Hopefully we'll have it before the next committee meeting so that we can actually take some action on this thing and move forward. But that's where that's at. Parks ban on using wood and charcoal. John lifted that up a week ago. There aren't any issues. Things actually surprisingly bounce back. They're pretty green in most of the parks right now. And then as Dennis referenced, that Lake County Astronomical Society, they've got another event planned October 13th. We've been out to a couple of those, and they really are.
That's cool.
A treat, because the venue in the park, where we kind of graded out a flat pad, just a gravel pad for these guys to set up, is you can see the whole horizon on 360 degrees. And these guys have telescopes that are not your father's telescope. These are serious computer-controlled, snap my iPod, I know the constellation's there, pitch it up to my telescope, the telescope beams over, dials it in, and pretty soon exactly what you're seeing matches the constellation that the iPod has through its GPS. It's incredible stuff. And,
they're very proud of their stuff.
Very proud, yeah, oh yeah.
They're willing to show it to you.
Oh yeah, they aren't bad. It's a fun event. So yeah, I would definitely recommend, and I know John's going to get that published. He gets news releases out to get folks out there for that. That was pretty much it for parks. John, as Dennis indicated, John is out at the funding source, what is this group now, the Great Lakes? It's actually a private public...
Great Lakes Community Grants. National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
They're a 501c3. They awarded us another $150,000, so we're up to $384,000 for that dam removal project, which has a total price tag of about $540,000. So it's substantially funded with grant funds. And like I say, this one's a public-private partnership, and there's the potential for them to do other things with us. We still want to restore that stream bank long-term along Pike through. That'll help control water erosion issues as well as just make it look a hell of a lot better. And they could be a source for that funding as well. So we thought it was worth John taking a ride out there and meeting these folks in person and thanking them. So that's where he's at.
So we're going to look at a little five-minute thing that John and one of his members put together on the Petronic Springs construction, and then we'll go on to these resolutions.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Jim actually can probably give the overview on this, but it's for folks that haven't been able to get out there and look at this, which is probably most of us.
This is Area 4 curb forming machine. For details, I defer to Mr. Sipsma. If it's a debit or credit, I can help you.
Well, I hope there's not much of this. We're looking to see something here.
Pour concrete in, curb comes out.
Yeah. This is a skid steer prepping for the curb.
It's one of the parking lots, Gary?
Yeah, that's a parking lot.
Right. I think that is Area 4. I think
parking lot. It's Area 4. We're going to show Area 2 here pretty soon. Oh, this is Area 2.
They're using recycled there, Gary?
Yeah, that's all recycled asphalt there. That's where they're doing some widening of the parking lot. A little bit of expansion.
You see that stump that's still in there? Future sinkhole.
This is dumping a load of stone for the curb base.
Now I know why John isn't here.
If this too is complicated?
If this is as exciting as this gets.
there's about 15 pictures, too, right after this, and then it's done. I know that's a grader, but I don't know what area that is. Is that still number
two? Goes forward.
No, that's not number two.
That's another parking lot. Yeah.
Parking Area 4, looking south. Parking Area 4, curb detail and a storm sewer. Do you want me to talk or do you want me to shut up?
No, go ahead. He wrote this all down.
Hand finishing taper and curb to storm sewer. That is green curbing. This is in Parking Area 4. This is the island. This is Parking Area 2, the storm sewer where it outlets into the Pike River. This is Parking Area 1, storm sewer piping. Parking Area 1, storm sewer junction basin. That's from the flagpole where you look north with the curbing removed. That's Parking Area 3. Island, they're ready to put in the curb. That's Parking Area 3 where they removed it. This is Parking Area 3. I think there's one more picture of Parking Area 3. Oh no. This is the Carlisle family news, the new sign, the dog park sign. This is the StarNet climbers. They were installed last year. This is a youth group project where they took out, there's an old concession stand there, they took out the wall in the middle of it, and oh, they had a contest. This is a first place winner. It's called Bilvis. That was a combination of Bill and Elvis. This is the second place. During construction, they unearthed Jimmy Hoffa. And the third place was Elvis had left the building.
What drove that, to have a little fun with that, was there was a guy that maintained, there was a mountain lion out there. And John, and he had put a letter to the editor and was scaring some of the folks. He had talked to John before, said, just snap a picture of a footprint, whatever. And so then we kind of tongue-in-cheek said, well, you know, if there's a mountain lion, maybe there's aliens. So, or Elvis. So
they put that
ran. Up. So that's kind of why, where they came from.
Well, thank you, Jim, for reading John's words for us.
If anyone could make that exciting, it would be John.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he wasn't here. I'm sorry. We'll move on to the resolution to accept the funds we've talked about here for the dam removal project. This is $150,000 from the Great Lakes Community Grants for the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and that is for the Pike River Fish Passage Dam removal. We've talked about this for quite some time. So, any discussion, or we get a motion?
Move to approve.
Moved by Supervisor Noodle. And a second.
Dodge.
Oh, you moved it?
I made the motion.
Second.
Noodle seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
I'll sign this and pass it on.
Chairman, with this grant, do you know if there's any required match or is it not matching?
No match.
Straight up.
Next one is a resolution to accept the Harris family donation. As you know, we have had the dog parks have naming rights. We have the Carlisle family, the Warren Close Dog Bark Park in town of Randall. The first dog park that we actually had up and going was a temporary one in Paddock Lake. And Dr. Harris, longtime veterinarian in Paddock Lake, stepped up, and his family wanted to donate the $12,500 for that dog park. And this resolution is to accept that $12,500 donation from the Harris family.
Move to approve.
Moved by Supervisor Nobles. Supervisor Sikorski?
I have a question. With the funds, have they been identified for a particular use? Will it be to maintain or improve anything at the dog park? Or
what it is for is one thing. Harris Pet Hospital will have their name on it. They're the Harris family. And it also keeps any taxpayer money from being involved in maintaining. Right now, the money that comes in from people getting their $20 tag for their dog, and this money has kept that fund separate, and there has been no taxpayer money additional that goes into these.
So they take this donation, maybe, but lack of better description, just put it in a trust, and then whatever it draws, that helps.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, if you want a new fence, whatever.
Question then.
Yes.
So the money for the people that pay to bring their dogs in there covers all the expenses of the utilities? Because I see we get billed every month for lighting.
And covers the utilities, covers the, there's a separate fund for when our lawnmower guys go out there. The whole,
So it's poop bags and so forth.
No cost to the taxpayer.
There's no cost to the taxpayer. And then all the improvements too, that whether it's the fence going in, or in this case, I believe some of this money is earmarked for the lights. There's going to be lights out there. Some are already put up. I think We Energy should put some of them up on the light poles that run along Highway 50 there by the sidewalk. They've already put the lights up. Some of this will be used to offset those, to cover those costs. So it's basically any improvements to the park as well as the ongoing maintenance.
Yeah, the second whereas says, County Board agree that only non-levy money, donations, fundraisers, sponsorships, or user fees could be used.
Okay.
So, Doug, you made the motion?
Yes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Mike Stilisky? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
User governance?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
One quick, Ray, if there's ever a year, let's just say, you know, we don't sell a lot of tags, and people don't have dogs, whatever, and your maintenance would costs would eat up whatever it was, then what we would do is just put off maybe some improvement until the next year where you had funds available.
Yeah, we definitely
kind of that. You have the two over there?
We definitely wouldn't make any improvement.
Oh, you already did.
Okay, so until we had funds, okay. Yeah. So I'm going to try to understand.
All right, so we're going to move on to old business golf, none. New business golf, Rydell Red 9 options. Dan, I guess before we start that, I'm just going to say one or two things. Last year we were looking at trying to save money here, what we could possibly do. I was looking at being in favor of doing a practice facility or shutting everything down there as far as the Red 9. Now with the drought year and with the construction that we've done on the other part of the courses and the good year we are having, by looking at these options has changed. I was fully in favor of us seeing what happened in 2012. And right now, before Dan goes through all these options and we've all read all these numbers, I'm just going to ask everybody to go down to Golf Management's recommendations and look at the page after that, which shows where we are now, golf's statistics July through year to date. And Dan will explain why keeping that 9 open this year saved us a lot of money, or made us money. So Dan, we'll move over on to you.
Can I ask a question first?
Sure.
The committee, didn't the committee actually, maybe not by resolution, but by consensus possibly, or what was the fashion of my, I'm under the impression the committee did recommend closing the golf course down for 2013.
Yes.
Okay. Was that by resolution?
No.
Just by discussion?
Right.
Okay. I guess the other thing is I wish that this would have been better on the, you know, placed on the agenda in a better fashion so that the general public would have known exactly what we're going to be talking about here tonight. In effect, you know, are we going to close the Red Nine? I think we would have had more than one person here. Jim happened to send me an email, and I happened to tell him it was going to be on the agenda. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been here.
This is mainly for discussion?
No. But we still are going to make a recommendation to the county executive in terms of what the committee's general feeling is in terms of that red course.
We don't necessarily have to do that tonight. But we've got some time. I think some of this came from requests for information to see where we are right now. And also, we've had this sitting, and we have to address it one way or another. We have to, you know, do something with the Red Nine or forget about doing something with it. So this is discussion tonight, and then some of Dan's report is on where we are, too. Dan?
The options for the Red Nine really remain the same that we've come up with last November or so. The option one is to eventually rearrange hole number one with the practice facility and operate as it is. We would like to create a more inviting range than what we have currently with nine matted tees and have more of a grass area. We feel that we can do that if we rearrange hole number one, and then the basic premise is just that we remain 45 hole golf course and operate as is. The second option is to close down. No golf, you know, just like Hillmore did over in Lake Geneva, which is very, very ugly. And then option three is to reduce the maintained area of the Red Nine and enhance the practice facility, create that a larger range tee, and then create the six hole practice areas. So underneath every option one, the positives and the negatives are all listed there. Do you want me to go through each one of these? Okay.
You know, I mean, everybody should have read this, I think.
Yeah, just a quick question, because Doug and I are looking at this. When you're talking about rearranging option one, I don't know if pictorially it shows it, because I'm familiar with the first hole, it comes out like so. How would you reconfigure, or is it drawn that way?
No, okay. The reconfiguration.
I'm not missing something here.
The reconfiguration would be the tee would be down by the pump house where the current pump house is, and the green, we'd have to build a new green where number two tee is, okay, and it would be a slight dogleg right, then that whole area would open up all of number one and where the current rest of the current range is for a longer driving range.
Any consideration to make that a par three?
We would prefer to keep it, you know, a par 36, you know, and this was all recommended by Lohman, you know, architectural firm, you know, so they have all their statistics on how wide everything needs to be, how far away, you know, all the landing areas need to be, you know, where the greens and the tees should be located, you know, so that they went through all of that.
My only thought is I've heard it multiple times talked about where, you know, for youth and maybe a little bit easier, and so you go to 35 or 34, who really cares? Because if you've got either beginners or even, like you said, your higher handicap players, par three is not, that's not a down, and it might simplify things, you know, to reconstruct. But I'm sorry, please proceed.
Okay. And I could go through all these positive and negatives for you if you'd like on each option, or you know, we can get to the golf management recommendation. And our big recommendation is, you know, we want to keep the Red Nine open. I mean, especially in 2013, we are going to be coming to you guys with the budget, and we are proposing that we do to the Blue Spruce what we did to the White Birch this year with new cart paths and new irrigation. And, you know, one of the only reasons why that we are in the financial situation that we are right now is because we had that Red Nine. We've played over 5,500 rounds using that Red Nine as part of an 18-hole course, or having people tee off on that Red Nine this year, and over $200,000 worth of revenue has come from, you know, just having that Red Nine available. If we would not have had that Red Nine, we certainly would not be in the same financial situation that we are. Whenever we were doing the White Birch this year, if we were working on the back nine, we would use the red and the front nine as an 18-hole routing. Or if we were working on the front nine, we'd use the red and the back nine of the White Birch as an 18-hole routing. And that's certainly something that we've been able to take advantage of and create revenue from. The other thing, as was spoken in citizens' comments, is, you know, the youth and the pace of play situation is so much alleviated by having that Red Nine. And I mean, there's just, you know, in last year I said to the county executive and possibly to you guys that, you know, there probably wasn't a lot of days that we absolutely had to have 45 holes. This year's a whole different story. I mean, you know, every Saturday and Sunday morning, this Sunday again, we did 520 rounds at Brightondale. Sunday, we did 350 just Saturday morning before all the weather came in on Saturday afternoon. And you know, it's that compression, those high demand times, you know, the weekday mornings, the league nights, you know, that really that league, that Red Nine is so important to us. And for our junior program, we have over 105 kids in our junior program. And you know, having that Red Nine there, you know, to get them that golf course experience, you know, Ray had explained it in the past when we're trying to develop a way to get people from taking lessons and onto that golf course experience. And that Red Nine is just so important to us. And to address your concerns, you know, one of the things in our restoration plan is we want shorter tees. We want tees that can accommodate the youth and the beginners and the seniors. And, you know, for Petrifying Springs is our longest 18-hole golf course from the forward tees, if you can believe that. It's only 6,000 yards, but from the forward tees, it's the longest golf course. So we want to do this restoration project and get to have that shorter tees, you know, that 4,600-yard, 4,800-yard golf course for ladies, for juniors, for seniors, you know, for beginners, so that it is faster play and more fun, and they see lower scores and that type of thing. So, you know, that's all in the future planning. But, you know, our recommendation is, you know, please keep the Red Nine or open. You know, please help us with the capital improvements that we're making. Dave is struggling every day with brakes still. You know, we have just an unbelievable amount of brakes on the red and the blue yet until that irrigation. The positive comments that we've gotten from paving the white and how much smoother it is and easier on people. And we have people that won't play the other two golf courses because the cart paths aren't done. But they are on the white, so they'll wait a half an hour to get out on the white because it's just that much smoother for them to drive on. And then, you know, our last recommendation is we just have to, you know, have more time. If we are going to go to a practice facility, if that is the right idea, you know, we just have to analyze that enhanced range and practice area. But while we're doing this construction and enhancements of the white and the blue, we certainly need to keep the Red Nine open.
Yes, sir, Mike.
This is a multifaceted, very complicated decision. One word that being a golfer, I'm not going to just jump into. I know there's been a study, and I know there's been recommendation. There's a lot of different dynamics, and the reason that we got into this whole thing is because this operation has been bleeding money. We've been in the red so long, you can't even see black anymore. Now, things that seem to have improved. Now, granted, we're having great weather. But for the taxpayer to continue to subsidize the golf operation, and I appreciate citizens' comments, but my opinion on municipal golf is it's fine to provide something, but the vast majority of the taxpayer should not be subsidizing others' recreational activities. That's the case. We own bowling alleys and fishing derbies and all kinds of auto shops because you like to work on. So we've got to keep this within reason. My goal is to have a golf operation that's self-sustaining and not relying upon the tax or the taxpayer money. Okay, they've done it in Racine. They can do it in Waukesha. They do it in many other municipalities. And I think one of the changes that the executive and you yourself have been involved with, we're starting to see some fruits of those changes. And I think they're long overdue. And you made the comment you were probably going to least have popular. And I'm glad to hear it because, you know, there was absolutely some changes that are necessary. There are many different aspects that we can look at in many different angles I'm looking at. I certainly can see the value of the thread of the red while you're going through this construction. I asked, you know, through that email to start seeing some financials. Why? I don't think we've ever seen them. It just kind of gets swept underneath the rug. That is going to help this committee, at least with me, to better make a more fact-based decision about the direction we should go. But our goal should be A, to be self-sustaining in the golf operation without the taxpayer support. And number two, we've got to be very careful to not be in competition with the private sector because we are still a public entity, all right? It serves a function, but you can't be at the cost of the private sector. And there are, you know, we all know the private courses, okay? They seem to be doing fine, and I want to see that balance there. We do have a very fine facility here, and I live closer to Penn, so I have a tendency to play in that, but both of these courses, one is closer to my house, but this one's in my district, so I have a very strong vested interest. But I want to start seeing what the financials and what that plan is going forward, because one great season of weather can't be what we make all our decisions over. So, but I didn't mean to get off on a tangent.
Noble?
Well, as soon as you got on a tangent, I'll jump on one too. First of all, I mean, you don't have a problem spending money on parks, and that's recreation as well for some people. I mean, I don't get why golf has to be sliced out of all the different recreational things that we offer to the community and say it has to be each and every year profitable. I would agree, the end game, it should be profitable. But right now, with all the baby boomers about to enter the leisure world, I think now is not the time to be talking about closing golf courses. I mean, we lose money on Petrified Springs. Why are we spending so much money putting a road through it? We lose money at Silver Lake Park for the swimming area. Why do we spend so much money improving that so people can go swimming all the time? You know, I live on a lake. I don't need that. I don't need to spend that money. I don't get that type of thinking at all. I'm sorry, I just don't get it. As far as closing it down, if you close that down, first of all, go past Hillmore. It don't look so bad right now because
it looks bad.
It looks bad, but not as bad as it did about 3 weeks ago because the city of Lake Geneva must have made a cut because it's been mowed.
They bailed it.
They bailed it? Unbelievable. It is bad. And if the option is to close it, you have what, 100,000 acres of bong and you're going to add another 3 acres to it? What value does that give the community? Add another 3 acres or however many acres there are in that red to $100,000 that's adjacent, 100,000 acres of wild bong, you know, that you can't really do much in other than maybe walk around in it. We have to have some vision like this Mr. Zilner?
Zilber.
You know, we have to have vision when we're in these positions and not just think of this year we didn't make money so we're going to, like the velocity study, you know, we're going to close it down because we want to make money. I don't believe there's any vision in that study at all. And I said that I was disappointed I know it's hard to look at a bunch of college kids and say, well, you didn't do a great job, but I was disappointed that they didn't come forward with some type of a methodology to attract more baby boomers to our golf courses. And that's what, being that they didn't do it, that's what we need to do. I mean, you know, they say the nursing homes are going to be inundated with, you know, people because of the baby boomers. Well, not everybody's going to need a nursing home. Some of us are hopefully going to have some time to go play golf. I don't know. I think we're totally missing the boat. And I'm tired of really hearing golf get railed on because it's not making money. And I agree, it's making money this year, and maybe it is partly because we're having a great year weather-wise, but maybe it is partly because word's getting out, because the conditions are so much better, because there are becoming more, you know, there are becoming, you know, baby boomers entering in the leisure world. I just don't think it's the time, and I can't support closing it down. And in 2013, or frankly any year. I would like to know more about that six holes. It says three on mine, but now you're saying six. And when you say practice, are we going to have any fee whatsoever? Because to me, I'm thinking that might be this whole thing I'm talking about. Maybe that's the key to attracting baby boomers, because low handicap. You know, personally, if I wanted to, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that, you know, want to go out on like a date. They don't need to play nine holes. Play six and have a fish fry afterwards. Sometimes nine takes too long to play anyways. For kids learning how to play golf, I think six is plenty. For me, six is enough. You know, I don't know. I mean, are we going to charge a reduced fee for this six? Or maybe it's same fee and throw in a fish fry? I don't know. What's the plan on that? Put a buffet line in, you'll probably have a lot of senior citizens there.
Go ahead. Yeah, the idea behind the six-hole practice facility is, yes, having a place where the Wadsworth Company is a company that we're partnering with, and they have, you know, said that they would provide a grant, $150,000 for three or six holes and $250,000 for a nine-hole facility. And, you know, they'll help with, you know, the construction costs. And what we had planned was we'll have to do more study and that type of thing. But, you know, having a reduced rate, whether it be $10 for, you know, using the practice facility and a bucket of balls or something to get people out there, you know, to, you know, or if it's $7.50 or $5 or whatever it might be to get out on that practice course. And we have a couple different routings set up, one that comes back to the golf course twice, so you can play three holes twice, or if we're having the junior program and we're on these three holes, the public can still use these three holes. You know, that's one of the layouts. The other layout utilizes a little bit more of the existing golf course, and it's just a six-hole routing, so you go out and you play all six and then you come back. So there's two different layouts that Lohman has done for the six-hole routing. But again, you know, that hasn't been further explored because, you know, we're in such dire need of having the red yet if we're going to be doing that construction on the blue.
To go back to the thing, you know, I mean, calm down a little bit, but really, I mean, we spent $450,000 for that bike trail, to pave a bike path from to connect the two universities, all tax dollars. We're spending how much to redo the parking lots in the park? I mean, it's all tax dollars. I mean, we really throw, I mean, we don't put any of our parks and recreations under the microscope that we do golf. Somehow, this county board got into this habit of putting golf under the microscope, and honestly, when I first got on the board, the bonds that we borrowed were revenue sharing bonds, which technically accountants would tell you that means the golf operation would have to be self-sustaining, and I think that's how the mindset got started. But those bonds have been refinanced as general obligation bonds, which means by you know, just by the structure of the bond, you know, it doesn't require golf to be self-supporting anymore. It's just kind of our mindset now, which I think it's something, a mind shift we have to get away from.
And if I can just add on that, I mean, golf is still less than 0.5% of our county budget. I mean, even with our losses that we you know, so it's a minute little bit of you know what is out there for the county budget. I mean, it's a lot of money. There's no question about that, but it's still less than 0.5%. You know, for
I think one last thing too. In 2015, I believe the old debt for building white and blue was cut off.
Yep.
So once we get, and is that a full payment in 2015 or a partial payment?
I believe it's a full payment. Yep.
So after 2015, I don't think we're going to have much problem making money at all. So if we hang on with that red for two more years,
right,
we're set.
I think what I wanted the committee to look at here this evening was some of Dan's report, and again, as Mike said, this is a huge decision to make with very little information. When I say very little information, I'm looking at the first 12 years I was on the county board, we were profitable, and the golf operation returned money to the general fund. Now for seven, it's lost money. Maybe it's eight. What we're looking at, and a lot of people don't understand some of the changes that have been made and we've been pushing for years. One of them is the dollar amount concession revenue per round. Look at the change in that. We've always said we got to keep people in the parking lot. They're starting to do that. And that's one of the things I've hammered on for years. The weather this year, sure, it's been fantastic. But when concessions, the change in concessions, and you look at, what is it, a 60-some percent increase in the fish fry. Naturally, we've only done it for 2 years, but they're serving good food, I've talked to people out there. We've got better equipment. We provided better equipment. The staff is doing a better job with it. We only have 1 year to look at here, and profit and loss at this point, $124,000. The reason the staff is hesitant to give us this type of information is that that's 2 weekends of bad weather. 3 at the most of bad weather, that $124,000 is gone. So we can't sit here and be horribly cheerful yet. We've got to look at the whole season and decide with these construction projects next year, we have another decent year. They keep providing us with good concessions, good per person out-of-pocket spending besides the golf. Can we hold on? Can we, for 2013, leave that red nine alone? Because every other option is expensive. You know, we're spending money, every other option. But this little glimpse of how we're doing this year isn't going to help us a whole lot with that decision. Everything's still a crapshoot. But like I said, 3 bad weekends, $124,000 is gone. I've seen the numbers, and I think I'm right, Dan. Yeah.
You did, we can do $60,000, $70,000 in a weekend. And
yeah.
That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
With the 2 courses. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing, Supervisor Noble, that we have to keep in mind with all the other park systems, everybody and anybody can go use them. But if you're not a golfer, you're not going to use the golf course. I'm not against the golf course, but the golf courses also require the most amount of revenue to keep them up so that you track usage. So we've just got to keep that in mind. The one thing that I know you were reluctant to do, Dan, was provide because it was a bad weekend or two. But what I was looking at is where we were actuals in 2000, not, and I don't know when you guys really started kind of tracking, maybe it's 2010, well, maybe it's 2009. You've got the actuals. Where are we in December or July 31st? We should at least have a fairly good idea. At least moving forward, I think we, right? This year, absolutely understand, right? Going through August, you all said the wheels come off. But up till now, you've got where we're at right now. And I hope that's what we're comparing is
July, the end of July to the end of July, not the whole entire 2011 season to the end of July, because that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah.
We just need to see. I think the most encouraging thing that I look at this, and you mentioned it, Chairman, about the concessions up, that's not it. I like the fact that the expenses per round are down. That means you're changing the way that you're running your operation. You're figuring out ways to do the same amount, if not better work, with less money. That is absolutely a necessity if you want to have the majority of the board supporting what's going on. You've got to show that you're trending in the right direction, and that is, we're attracting more quality golfers, and I think that I'll take your word for it. I haven't been out to you. I'll play a lot more than I do right now. And yet, your expenses are going down. That's right away, you're going to start seeing the black. And I understand, it ebbs and flows. It is a big decision, and I'm not here to sit and say, oh yeah, we're going to close that. I'm not necessarily for closing the red. I like the red. I like the flexibility of it. And if you decide, hey, you know what? Sign up for 9, go play 6. Wasn't walked off the course. You're having a bad day. You get tired, whatever. You can still do that. But if you cut it down to 6 holes, you haven't got the option unless you go play the first 3 again. Then you got to wait behind somebody. And you know how that all goes. I'm mainly looking at making sure that we're trending the right direction on our revenue versus expenses. How we do that, that's up to you. You and your comrades in arms within the golf operations. You know, doing things differently, thinking how to be more efficient. And being in the private sector, we have to do it all the time. Reevaluate. Gee, we've always done it that way. That doesn't mean it's the best way to do it. All right? You know, go over here and end up over here. Why don't I just go right over here? Those kinds of things. Using equipment more efficiently, staging them out, care for the course. And to your point, you mentioned about the cart pass and that you've gotten some feedback. It'd be very interesting to know if you have percentage-wise of how much that's starting to have a positive impact. Those kinds of things can help influence decisions long-term, because if you're right, the last game is 2015, that's great. But right now, over the last 7 years, it's been red, and it's an issue, and it's an issue with constituents, and I've got to keep that in mind too, not just the fact that, well, we've got this here. We've got to figure out ways to be more efficient so that we can keep this one around. Because it's a great asset to the county, no doubt about it. So,
where's that?
Yeah, I'll try to keep mine a little short. Couple of questions. One question I'd like to ask first is, if we're making money on concessions, why am I reading that we're thinking about contracting it out if we're making money?
The reason that we were thinking about contracting it out is this is a request that was made for us, and we feel that we're not able to sell alcohol. The only way that we can sell liquor is if we contract it out. We do get a lot of outings that when we get into the negotiations and we start telling them that we don't provide any alcohol, they'll... Oh, sorry, we're not coming, you know, and Saturday morning, if you sit at the bar, you'll hear all kinds of, can I have Bloody Mary? Sorry, we don't have anything for you. So
it came from this committee.
And this year is the big turnaround with the concessions. I mean, you know, to be 60,000 ahead of, you know, in the past or wherever we're at, you know, is tremendous, you know, and so that'll all go into the evaluation of whether this RFP is worth doing or not.
Yeah, and admittedly, I'm a novice. Why can't we statutorily change so we can sell alcohol?
A government entity that issues liquor licenses cannot have a liquor license. That's the basis.
That's state? State law,
or? We can't have a Class A.
Can't have
a state law. It's state law. I remember that.
Yeah, Terry Rose asked that it go up to the legislature and see if they could change that law. So, I mean.
So it's like, I don't know how many years ago that I pushed hard to get us to at least sell beer.
Yeah.
And that year we made $75,000 more than we had ever done. So now we started pushing for this and wanted to get some local people to bid on it.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to say, I think, is part of the reason why there's a focus, at least on my behalf, of the golf courses during our orientation for the new supervisors, I think the statement was made that according to statutes, the only thing that we don't have to have as a county is a nursing home and golf courses. And that's what we were told. So that's probably why there might be a little focus on golf course and maybe the nursing home. Then also, under your option three, just so I've got this right, do we add up these figures, 772,000, 534,000, 733,000, 495,000? Is that what it's going to cost us? 2,534,000?
No. The savings of 700, it's savings of 772,000 if we add up the 534 and the 733, so that's $1.2 million.
Okay.
And then you subtract out the 495, that's what you would save, is the 722. This 495 is for redoing the practice area, having the six holes and redoing the range. That's about what the estimate is, that would be, you know, 495,000 if we continue to operate the red and we switch hole number one. It'll be about that 1.2 million is because the whole irrigation, and Dave will go through in minute detail all the problems that he's having on the red, is just the pipe is so feeble that it needs to be replaced, and that's the 534,000. And then the 733 is the other restoration part of it. It's the shorter tees, it's the redoing the bunkers and the tees and all of the additional restoration things that we want to do to that, you know, and switching the hole number one.
So how does that fit in with our zero levy?
That's up to how the people figure their own budgets.
Yeah, this won't be in 2013, and you know, this will be capital expenditure.
If we leave it alone, the course for 2013, none of this will be.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Anything else, Dave?
No, thank you.
Dave?
Yeah. Did you say, somebody said, if we live alone, we don't have to spend the 534 and the 733?
We will not be spending that in 2013. What we're asking for is to do the blue spruce in 2013.
But not tonight. I mean, that's
right.
No.
All this is
of the.
Hang on. Yeah.
Wasn't sure.
Okay.
Okay, and the 534 again, and the 733 is for what?
534 is to completely redo the irrigation, all the pipes, all the wires, all the heads on the blue, on the red nine.
Okay.
And the 733 is the restoration projects that we would like to do. That's moving hole number one in the range so that we have a grass tee range area. I mean, we just had a discussion today. We have the NCAA Division II. We have 25 teams coming with five guys each team, and we're trying to figure out how to get them to hit balls because we don't have, you know, that practice facility there, you know. So we're attracting these type of outings and people, and we don't have the facility that is needed. We have the capacity on the golf holes, but they don't have a place to warm up. So that's part of it. And then, you know, just everything on the golf course has a useful life, and it's all past its useful life. That golf course is 40 years old, and the tees and the greens and the bunkers and everything is past its useful life, and that's just restoring it, just as we did with the courthouse downtown and the Molinaro building. We spent $5 million down there to restore those buildings, and this is exactly what has to happen to the golf course, you know, in some fashion, to restore it so that it remains playable for another 25, 30 years.
Okay, so if we keep the red nine, eventually it's going to cost us $1.2 million probably within the next 2 years.
It's slated for
2016.
Yeah.
Keep it would be out that far.
2016.
Okay. Now the other thing that I keep on hearing is that the main reason why the golf course is losing money every year is because of the debt service. Right.
Right. We're the only department in the county that has to pay.
Okay.
Any
but if
debt.
We look at the private sector, the other golf courses, they're making money. They also have the debt service, and on top of that, they're paying taxes. Why? I mean, we use that as a debt service. The reason why we're losing money every year. versus the private sector. They're making money. They still have the debt service, and on top of it, they pay real estate taxes, which we don't. So we should be making a lot more money compared to that. And our prices, I believe, are very comparable, if not more, than the other golf courses.
Well, there's a lot of reasons, you know. I mean, everybody says that we're supposed to operate these golf courses as a business, but we cannot operate it as a business. I mean, it's a government entity, and it's been said that we have to be fair with the private entities also. I mean, we don't have a banquet facility such as Bristol Oaks. We don't have weddings and banquets in the winter. We don't, you know, we don't have an alcohol license, and that's one of the reasons for the RFP. We don't have the pavilion for the outings. I mean, every time we have an outing over 100 people, we have to rent $1,000 or $1,500 tent and put it up. I mean, the purchasing processes that we go through now and the different you know, things that we have to do are all regulated by, you know, the county, and it's a lot more hoops to go through than it is at a private business. It's not, you're not running this golf course as a private business. It's definitely a government entity, and that costs extra.
Nothing else, Ben?
No.
Oh, okay.
So, 2015-16, these changes, the irrigation, you think you can lift it off for, let's be honest, that's 3 years. You sure about that? 3 years?
No, not sure at all. We got some major
issues. And I certainly understand about the, everyone likes to have tee boxes, and I mean, you go out to, you know, Maple Crest or Bristol Oaks, and they've got some crooked ones, and who couldn't use some rebuilding of tees or greens or bunkers, and, you know, but, like I said, so can the restoration part be? I think that one maybe you could limit through 3 years or whatever until some more funds. And this is just kind of a what if. What if you were able to run it, you know, as a private entity? You know, you were given the opportunity to run it as that. You know, you're on your own, but as such, you're responsible for your P&L. If you guys in your golf and the golf operations talked about that, could you
certainly do it? We certainly have, but it's not an option for us because we can't do it. That's
well,
a pie
don't
in the sky
say type
of.
Can't. Let's just say that it was an option.
Okay.
Could you do it? Would you want to do it? Because that's how they do it, Racine, and they're very good at it. And maybe you just haven't given thought to it, but I want to plant that seed with you, because just because it isn't done that way doesn't mean it can't be done that way. It's just that we're not structured that way right now.
I mean, the deferred maintenance, the maintenance that has been pushed off and off and off on these golf courses, you know, for years and years and years. I mean, I don't know, if you've played Browns Lake or Ives Groves compared to Brightondale or Petrifying Springs, it's totally different golf experiences. I mean, they're leased out, they're private entity that are running those, but they're certainly not in the same type of quality and the conditions that we offer at Brightondale and Petrifying Springs. So, I mean, you know, the deferred maintenance would have to be an issue that has to be addressed before that can, you know, be done. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we're catching up with is, you know, just 25 years of, you know, neglect.
Gotcha.
When this meeting closes, I'll make it real quick. When this meeting closes.
No, you can't do this. Doug?
Yeah, sir. A couple things that came to mind while we were talking. First of all, is it possible that we could pull a note? I don't know, was that a 15-year loan or was that 20? Was that 20 years? We could pull what the golf courses did in that 15 years long term. Because like Supervisor Elmerman said, we had probably 12 years where we were putting money in, you know, we were actually putting money back into the general fund. And then we've had 7 bad years. I'm just curious, over the course of that entire rebuilding, how has golf done in the long term, in that long term? I would like to see that. if somebody could do that for me. Then also, going back to something I started to say, and I got maybe off on a tangent, but to do this, if we're going to look, passively look for 2014 or whatever year at doing six holes, we have to do some type of a market analysis on that, but I think you know that, right? Okay. And then, I've always felt this, I've said it before, and it kind of goes to what Jim Mills was saying. I've always felt that if it wasn't for municipal golf, only the very rich would be able to play golf. If you eliminated every single municipal golf course, I mean, you're right, we don't have to have golf, but then if you go back 100 years, our forefathers, if they didn't have municipal golf, only the privileged would be able to play golf because they wouldn't have cheap alternatives. The municipal golfs keep other golf courses prices lower, so yes, right now in this day and age, there are other golf courses to go to besides municipal courses, but roll back time 100 years or move forward 100 years and stop all your municipal courses 100 years from now. Nobody we know is going to be able to afford golf. In Europe, I'm told, only the very rich play golf in Europe. The average guy can't even get on a golf course in Europe. That's actually one of the biggest attractions of coming to America. Is, wow, you guys can play golf? It's like, really? So, I just have always felt that. Even before I was a golfer, I've always felt that. And I'm not much of a golfer now.
Okay, folks, this isn't working at all this evening.
Well, I want to make a motion that we go forward with his recommendation for 2013 with the red course.
Second.
And make that as a recommendation to the staff to prepare for the budget for the county. You know, our feeling to the county executive.
Your recommendation would be that we do not close the Red Nine.
For 2013.
We analyze plans, but we spend no money on the Red Nine irrigation and restoration.
For 2013.
For 2013. Now something's finally starting to work here. Okay. Any discussion on that? Second from Supervisor Dodge. Go ahead.
I don't think we have really all the information that we need, and especially for the new people.
We're making a recommendation here this evening.
Right.
This isn't the end of the world. Everybody's given all their personal opinions this evening. This is a recommendation that we brought to the county executive, the full county board. Budget time means a lot. We don't have to spend 4 hours on this tonight.
I understand.
All right.
I don't say that we should, but at the same time, I don't think we do have enough things where we should be able to. Actually, I don't have enough information where I'm going to be able to make a recommendation.
Well, then vote no.
One other question. Is there a plan with the revenue or the profit from this year? Because it looks like right now it would be a profit. That can be segregated and only applied to golf course?
No,
I don't know how that works. So, or is it just dumped back into the general fund?
Yeah.
It worked various ways, but how the golf course worked initially was they didn't spend any money unless they had the money. So, I mean, there was a profit every year for years. And
some change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other question, that you had mentioned NCAA tournament, and that's a big deal, don't get me wrong, and obviously not having a practice facility, does that mean they're not going to have it right now?
No, we are. We're kind of asking the teams to stop at Bristol Oaks and hit balls before they come out. That's really what we're doing because, you know, we
and
don't...
You can't temporarily...
We'll try. We looked at it today, and you know, I mean, but those guys, you know, I mean, they hit the ball so far, you know.
You put a net up in the back set.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult, but yeah, we're going to say no woods, and we're going to try and rope off a little area around one, number one fairway on the red, so that they hit out into the range, and we'll try and accommodate them the best we can, but we're also pointing out the other facilities.
Okay, we're just talking on Supervisor Noble's motion.
Sorry.
So Second by Supervisor Dodge.
I understand, but part of making a recommendation on this, Chairman, would be understanding finances. And things like this can have a big impact upon the finances.
Right.
I don't know what it is. I'm just interested because I don't know what it is. But there's got to be a financial upside to having a tournament like that.
Well, when you begin speaking, then say that's what you're speaking about. We're on the motion. Any other discussion? If not, all of those in favor of Supervisor Noble's motion to recommend to the county executive and the county board that we do not close the Red Nine Golf Course in 2013, we do not spend money on improvements, cart path paving, irrigation on the Red Nine, and we take time then to analyze the plan for enhanced range, practice holes, or whatever the county board deems appropriate.
Can I ask one question? We definitely have problems with the Red Nine irrigation. Does that mean we can't repair it? I mean,
no.
Okay.
No.
Just that we're
we
not going to
do it. We did that some this summer, right?
Yeah. We're just not going to do it. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
You the governor?
Aye.
So that's our recommendation. So now, Dan, you can go on to your director's report.
I think we've covered most of everything else.
We did. Thank you, Dan.
That's in here. So,
all right. Did I tell you I get up at 4?
Yeah. And the financials, if anybody has any questions, we can ask those. But
I think we did cover just about everything.
Yeah. And then there's the RFP that was sent along. And it's just mostly informational, and it's got the schedule on there and stuff. So
I just want to add one thing on the RFP. At this point, we're doing it because we got to kick the tires and see if it's worth doing. We're not saying that it's definitely going to be done. We know we're going to market to find out what the marketplace has to say, and then we'll bring information back to the committee.
Yep. And it could be a private-public partnership. Yes, sir, ma'am.
Just a comment, I think it's a great idea because you don't know what you don't know, and running food operations is much different than running a golf course. So like you say, you might find that you can get into a partnership where it just frees your hands from having to deal with it's a lot of hassle in food. I mean, it just is. So I'm glad to see that you're going to go forward with it. Thank you.
Supervisor Noble?
Do we have a corporation council opinion we can't serve alcohol? I think we do.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Was that the reason? Because, do we issue permits?
Yes.
Yes. Liquor licenses?
Yep. Believe me, I looked into it. Corporation council.
I thought only the towns did. Towns and villages.
It's very specific. There's a specific statute I remember that Bernie laid out for us when Supervisor Rose most recently. I think his question has been asked a number of times over the years.
Numerous.
All right. And, it's a specific statute.
And there's probably a couple ways you can read it. So I'll just say this one time. We've not tried. But there is political pressure for us not to try. The way I read it one time, I think we could try. But there's strong pressure for us not to do it. So that's why I got the idea, well, then let somebody else do it. Do it at our facility.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, anybody that has a problem with it, they could have bid on it.
Right. There's only one liquor license in the town of Brighton. And that's, they said all the people will be all angry. And that's Jetty's Bar. So I still have to see if Jetty's wants to hold a liquor's license over there. So. Okay, so can we move on?
Yes, please.
Facilities, 60th Street Tower. And
a couple of quick updates on 60th Street Tower. It continues to move, not as quick as I'd like, but it's moving. The FAA, we've got to get them, we just got an email from them today, actually, that requests some additional information on a survey. There isn't anything that tells us they're not going to support our request to put it on 60th Street. They just need a little bit more information. We've actually got the RFP prepared for the tower specifications itself. I've got to meet Friday with the consultant to go over that, fine-tune it, and get that ready to actually get it out to bid. So that is our plan, to get that out for bid so that we have kind of parallel tracks running here as the FAA continues to do what they got to do. City Council is actually taking, I think it was listed on their agenda for this week, they're going to start modifying the ordinances required to accommodate such a tower, the tower at the 330-foot height. So that's all in play. We're still cautiously optimistic that we'd be able to get the tower itself constructed before December 1st. We wouldn't have it fully functional probably until February, but as long as we get it up before the weather gets real nasty, that would be a good thing. And we'd be able to, even in an emergency situation, get it enabled. Getting it up is the challenge. So that's the overview of that whole thing. Park and Ride. There's finally some movement. The 288-page document that we had to prepare because of the state's requirements for that bid process was done, and we got approval to list it on July 27th. We got a walkthrough tomorrow. Bids are going to be open until August 17th, hoping that we will get a number of contractors to bid on this thing, because it's really not that much work, but it's critical work that would need to be done. Hope to have a contract in place by Labor Day, get the work done in September and October of this year. That's pretty much it.
Cool. Thanks, Ray.
The only other note is we debated about the Yule House last month. I think everybody's aware of what happened.
They backed out.
They got an offer for free from a church, a local church, and they're going to do it that way this year. But they are still interested in purchasing the building long term. So I'm sure we'll have ongoing discussions.
Right.
Do we have any requirements for maintenance or repairs or anything in the meantime?
We're only going to do the minimum to keep it kind of in a status quo condition. We're still working on emptying the building out of historical center stuff and files from the Corporation Council and DA. That's kind of what we're doing. We're working on, continue to work on.
When we get everything cleared out of there, we'll begin to start, regardless of this, we're going to start trying to market it?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Moved, seconded by Supervisor Kaminsky. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Bill.